Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 59, recorded June 27th, 2012. Parag Khanna and Hybrid Reality. Triangulation is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TRIANGULATION. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audiblepodcast.com/triangulation.
Welcome to Triangulation, the show where we interview interesting people doing amazing things, or sometimes just brilliant people doing something kind of dull, or, you know, anybody we really want to talk, anybody I really want to talk to. We've got actually a two-parter today. In just a moment, I'm going to talk to Zach and Amanda about their motorcycle trip across the country. Then a little bit later on, we're going to talk to Parag Khanna. He's an author, written a brand new book called Hybrid Reality. He's a futurist, a great thinker. So we've got a lot of good stuff. But first, let's say hi to Zach Sedawong. Hi, Zach.
Hi, how's it going, Leo?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And Amanda Pollan.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. And you're not both riding this bike. There's another bike outside, the Honda.
Correct.
We're going to leave that outside. This is the Triumph. What is your plan, Zach? What are you doing?
So the overall goal of this is to make a documentary. And we're traveling 8,500 miles. It could be closer to 10,000 miles around the entire U.S. We're pretty much making a big circle around the whole U.S. all the way up to Niagara Falls.
Wow.
And the East Coast, coming back down. And when we come back across, it'll be off-road, so it's going to get real sketch. It'll make for some good TV viewing on Amanda.
You're not riding an off-road bike.
No.
You're on a street bike.
I'm on a sport bike.
This is an off-road bike, though.
Right.
Let's take a look at this. This is a Triumph.
This is a Triumph 800 XC Adventure Motorcycle. It's a 2011. We specifically got the 2011 model, not the 2012, because we didn't want ABS for the off-road section, even though the 2012 would be just fine, Triumph. But basically what we're doing is we're filming the whole thing, and we're trying to make it interactive. So besides making it a documentary with no support crew, usually you have two trucks behind
right.
you with camera crews right. and all the gear. So we're carrying all the gear and equipment on here, which makes it a really tough challenge. Just in this case alone is everything we're using. We're using two Canon 5Ds.
You're shooting in an SLR. So that's kind of cool.
Right.
This is Amanda's 7D.
Right. This is Amanda 7D, and then I have a 5D. And we're shooting with these using the...
Amanda's going, don't drop my camera.
And we're using the Joby tripod systems because we can switch them to be handheld. We can wrap them around poles.
Right.
We can mount them on
things.
You
don't shoot while you're riding, do you?
We do. We have cameras attached to our helmets.
You have GoPros on here?
That's where these are Contour GPSs.
Okay.
They're HD. They film. We just slide the little thing forward. They record while we're going. We also have on the other side of the helmet, these are Senna Bluetooth communication headsets. They
communicate. So you can talk to each other.
Right. And they also communicate with our Google Android GPS phone, which we use for all our maps, which is sitting over there, not on the bike.
And you also are recording your narration as you drive.
Right. The Senna headsets give really good quality, and then they also give us an extra jack out of the back. And from there, we go into this Zoom HN4
yeah, the Zoom's great.
Recorder,
yeah. Yeah.
And it records all of our audio so that we can have voiceovers in the end to do everything.
So what kind of voiceover? Like, oh my God, we're going off a cliff! Now,
let's see. Yesterday, it was... Hurry up, old man. I don't want to wait for you anymore.
How many miles? 9,000 miles you're going
to
go?
It'll end up being between 85 to 10. It looks like it's going to be 10 because we keep getting called to go different places.
And how long is that going to take?
It should take us about 3 months.
Okay.
And if anybody wants us, if they look at our route map on our website,
pursuithorizon.com,
you can find where we're going. And you know what? Just send us the thing and say, hey, we want you to come. You want to meet us. You want to see us. If you have motorcycles, if you have a club, if you have a motorcycle dealership, we'll go to where you are. If you want your logo on the bike, ain't no problem. We'll put it on there. Maybe just kicking some gas, or I got my Starbucks card number.
Who are your sponsors? You got ShortStack, which is a Facebook app.
So ShortStack.com, they make Facebook applications for businesses. So if you have a business and you want to make it, you want to make it look awesome and just super easy with widgets, go to ShortStack.com, sign up. It's free at the beginning. You can do it for free. And then later on, once you get like so popular that you can't stand it, you'll have to pay.
And Dunlop the tires.
Dunlop tires helping us out with tires.
The tripods, the Gorilla Pods.
Joby's right out of San Francisco, so we're going there on Friday.
Yep.
We also have Senna Bluetooth headsets with the SMH10 headsets.
Parts, I have to try those. I didn't realize they were so good sounding.
Cool. They are really good. Parts Unlimited is helping us out a lot. And I believe we got everybody. And then we're also...
And you started out of Reno.
We started out of Reno.
So this is early on in your...
This is early. This is 720 miles in.
Oh, guys, you haven't hardly gone anywhere
And then
yet.
Day four. And every single day...
Day four.
That's why we look
Come
so
back
good.
And talk to me
we're
9,000 miles. That's what
we're
I
gonna
want.
We're going to look haggard on day...
Yeah, no 30, kidding.
Because we're sleeping anywhere we can find.
Are you camping?
Our budget is $20 a day for food between the both of us.
Wow.
Gas takes up majority of it. Starbucks takes up the majority because we spend 3 to 4 hours a day in Starbucks just charging our batteries and
blogging. Because you do post every day.
Every day we blog. Every
do
week
you upload
we'll do,
video every day too?
Once a week we're going to do a video podcast from a different location.
Cool.
So basically,
and you're going to some beautiful spots. Isn't
yeah,
it?
We're going to some nice spots.
And then painted desert. And where else are you going to go? I mean, go ahead, Amanda.
Let her talk.
We've got a couple different places, mainly a lot of the national parks. I've traveled to all 50. He hasn't.
You've been to all 50?
I've been to all 50.
Wow.
So we're going to go and see, I think next is Zion National Park.
Beautiful. Wow.
We decided to kind of skip over the Grand Canyon. We've both seen it. So. No.
Their first fight, and they're only 4 days in.
We're going to the Grand Canyon. I want to see it again.
Right. Yeah, we're going to the Grand Canyon. I want to see it. I want to see it again. It's awesome.
And then. And then we're heading mainly south. I know it's going to be...
By the way, Amanda's the navigator, right?
So
I think she's in control here, I have to tell you.
I have no sense of... the only thing I have is my Google Android GPS. If it fails, I'm just circling the block over and over again for 3 months.
Turn left at Las Vegas, you'll be
right,
fine.
Right. So then after that, we're heading mainly south through the U.S. over to Georgia, where we'll be meeting up with Triumph. That's their headquarters over there. And then up the coast, all the way up to Niagara, and then back down.
We have to stop at Dunlop headquarters in Buffalo, New York, too.
Now, let me ask, Amanda, have you ridden the Triumph, and have you ridden the Honda? Triumphs are probably a pretty big, heavy thing to control.
Yeah,
right?
I'm too short. I'm only 5'2".
It's a big bike.
Yeah, yep, nope,
Triumph,
I haven't.
Triumph makes a model just, it's not an XC, but it's a Triumph 800, and they make a lowered seat. So with that version, she could do it.
Right.
The problem is... Budget-wise, another $20,000 for another bike, it just became too tight to do it.
This is a $20,000 bike?
Yeah, once you put the little gadgets and gizmos...
You got $50,000 of gear on it, too. I don't want to encourage any theft or anything, but this is you've got some stuff on it.
The bike is $12,099 MSRP. You start adding on some of the stuff, and you can get close to 20 pretty quickly, and then you add on the rest of the stuff we have, and we got lots of locks.
How big is the engine on this?
This is an 800cc triple.
Wow. Wow.
Amanda's bike is a sport bike, which is a 600cc, one of those crotch rocket ones. But it's a lot faster than my bike.
I was going to say, she could ride rings around you as you try to get to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, if I don't want to talk to him anymore, I just take off.
That happened a little bit today when the Google GPS failed and we were arguing over how to get to the studio. I just saw her. She was gone on the freeway.
Well, you guys have been very patient. They got here during our Google I.O. coverage. I said, right after this, then we had to do security now. I said, right after this, then we had to do Twig. And I said, right after this. So thank you for sticking around.
No,
I really
thank you.
It's been our pleasure. I've watched you now or listened to you for almost 20 years. I don't seem as old as I am, but I'm 40.
You started when you were 12.
I'm 40. I started when I was about 20. And I started listening to you back then or watching, I think it was on ZDTV.
It's amazing because I'm only 25, so I don't know how that happened. So PursuitHorizon.com if people want to follow your trip in 3 more months.
Or Facebook.com/PursuitHorizon. Bump the likes.
Yeah, like them on Facebook, yeah.
Yes, thank you, Leah.
It's so nice to meet you both.
Thank you.
Good luck, Zach. Good luck, Amanda.
Thank you.
Be safe, drive safely, and have a great time. I think you're going to some beautiful places.
We will. And we're really glad to carry the Twit logos on the bikes as we go around the country and just promote Twit. And I listen to the shows every day, So for me, it's one of the logos I really wanted.
That's really awesome. And eventually this will be a documentary. We'll find out more by going to the website. Will it be called Pursuit Horizon?
It should be called Pursuit Horizon, unless maybe someone wants to actually buy it for a lot of money and change the name. Well, I might be able to do that.
AT&T presents Pursuit Horizon.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you both. Good luck.
Thank you.
That's great. We're going to transition over to the other set because we've got a great guest. We're going to talk a little bit about hybrid realities. I don't know what it means. We'll find out. Parag Khanna joins us in just a second. So I'm going to walk over there right now, and we'll pick up over at the triangulation set. See you there in a second. Ah, we're back. Parag Khanna joins us in just a little bit. We're going to talk about hybrid realities. How about that transition, huh? But first, a word from the folks at Citrix about GoToAssist. Have you seen the new GoToAssist? Wow! GoToAssist has added a whole new feature set. You know, it's been known for years. We've been talking about it for 7 years, eight years, I think. It's been around for 10 as the best remote support application. 8 sessions at once, unattended support. Gives you an assay of all the software and hardware running and all of that stuff. But now they acquired a new company, and they've added a new feature. Monitoring is new on GoToAssist, which means if you're an IT support professional, the ability to find out everything that's on your customer's network, hardware and software, all the network-attached devices, then set up customized alerts so that you know proactively before something goes wrong. You can have instant messenger, email, or text messages say, hey, the toner cartridge is low or the network is down, and you'll know immediately. This is if you're looking to up your game to become a managed service provider, to really give grade A, top-of-the-class support to your clients, you've got to try this. Now, the good news is you can do it free for the next 30 days, including the remote support and monitoring module. If you visit GoToAssist.com and use the offer code or the promo code TRIANGULATION, GoToAssist.com, click the Try It Free button. The promo code for this is TRIANGULATION. Give it a try today. And we do thank Citrix. They're so great. For their support throughout all of our programs. Just type, see where it says promo code, click that, and then just type in triangulation. That's that easy. You got to try this. Our next guest, I love saying that, our next guest on the show is Parag Khanna. He is an author, a futurist, and he wrote a book with his wife, Aisha, called Hybrid Reality, Thriving in the Emerging Human Technology Civilization. He's joining us, I think, from London. Are you in London, Parag?
I'm actually in Edinburgh, Scotland, at the TED Global Conference.
Oh, how fun. Well, it's great to meet you. Thank you for joining us on Triangulation.
Thank you.
So I'm going to have to start off. What the heck is hybrid reality?
Well, you're living in it, so.
Oh, that's what you call it.
There you go. I mean, look at this. We're having this interview via Skype, two different sides of the world, on video and everything. So in that sense, we're already in this age where our communication is mediated so much by technology. You may have as many friends whom you've never met, but are friends with them online via Facebook as you have in real life. But let's step back a little. Hybrid reality is actually about this frontier of the information age, where we should stop thinking about IT as representing all of technology and wake up to how biotechnology, nanotechnology, alternative energy, advanced manufacturing, robotics, artificial intelligence, how all of these other sectors of technology also are combining, fusing with IT to change our lives even more radically than IT has. So this is one reason why we call it hybrid reality. And the civilization that you mentioned in the subtitle of the book is really also about our increasing socialization with machines, robots, avatars, and so forth, and how we're really entering a human technology civilization.
You know, Alvin Toffler, must be 40 or almost 50 years ago, wrote about future shock and how we were already in a world that was changing so dramatically. And I think it's funny, it's like a fish in water. You don't see the water. It's you're in this, you're part of it, especially our audience and us, because we use this every day. We don't see how things are changing. And we don't especially see what's coming on the horizon.
The Tofflers were amazing because they saw the fish and the water.
Yeah. Right?
They not only looked at the megatrends and the soup, but, right, you know, they looked at how it impacts each and every individual fish. You know, I mean, how would each of us react? They had such stunning predictions about how we would emotionally respond to technology, how we would each be almost, you know, lulled and lured into it and become addicted to it.
Exactly.
Wrote about these things, as you said, 40 years ago to 20, 25 years ago, you know, they made such amazing long-range predictions. And as you know, in this book, we cite them heavily. It's, of course, no accident that as a husband and wife team, you know, admired them a lot and spent a bit of time with them, actually. And, you know, just learning the lessons from their approach to history.
You call yourself a geostrategist.
You know, this book is actually about this neologism of ours, geotechnology.
Yeah, what is that?
My background is actually in geopolitics. And Aisha, her background is very much in technology. So where my geopolitics and her technology come together, you get geotechnology. That's very much what this book is about. So the technology, first of all, as a driver of so much of what we consider to be the mega trends today. People talk about great economic shifts, balance of economic power, balance of military power. What people fail to realize is those topics that are so germane to the East Coast, to New York, and to Washington, you know, the driver of those trends and shifts is technology change, right? What, and let me give you a simple quiz. How many nuclear weapons does China have?
None.
No, it has lots.
I don't know. I mean, obviously got that one wrong. I don't know. How many nuclear weapons? How many?
There's two reasons. There are two reasons why you're making the point. First of all, you don't know because it doesn't matter.
Right.
And second of all, they've had nuclear weapons for about 40 years.
Right.
But 40 years ago, you didn't think China was a superpower.
Right.
Now, how do they come to be a superpower? Well, it's not because they have that many more nuclear weapons. It's because of technology. It's because of manufacturing technology that they started picking up in 1978. And ever since then, they've become the world's factory floor. That's how they built up the economic reserves, the balance of payments, and the ability to throw around their money to spend on their military. So if China is a superpower today militarily, it starts with the technological shifts they made in just a very simple area of manufacturing almost 35 years ago. So again, we need to wake up and realize that the root cause of so many of the things that we think are in other people's hands and other people's control, diplomats, statesmen, politicians, in fact, technology drives those things. And by the way, there's nothing new about that. This is a 5,000-year-old lesson. But we've arrived at a time when technologists need to think not just about what happens on the West Coast, but also on the East Coast.
You point out China spends has declared they're going to spend $1.5 trillion on things like solar power, on new technologies, information technology, biotech, high-end manufacturing, advanced materials. They see this as the future. They clearly understand that this is the engine that's going to power their advance in society. Are we not paying as much attention? Should we be paying more attention to technology? It seems as if we invent it here, don't we?
That's a, you know, fascinating set of points you're making right there, because we invent a lot of things. It doesn't mean that we innovate everything, right? I mean, you know, we are still by far the most inventive nation in the world with basically no equal. But the diffusion of technology is happening so quickly. We make something and then, you know, it gets adopted over there by companies through theft, through joint ventures, through duplication, through partnerships, whatever the case may be, one way or the other. Whatever we do in biotech and semiconductors, you name it, all of a sudden, 2 years later, it's happening over there. And then they are, of course, closer to their own market. And Asia is the largest market in the world for so many things, increasingly. So you find that, you know, the Chinese didn't invent solar power. But, of course, they've got 50%+ of the global market in that domain. So we have to keep on inventing and innovating and commercializing faster and faster in order to keep up with the competition. And that for the $1.5 trillion you mentioned, that is China's 12th five-year plan. And indeed, they're looking way beyond manufacturing, of course. They don't just want to be the factory floor. They want to dominate now all of these advanced sectors that, again, we are traditionally the leader in, but we may not be for long unless we make similar investments.
So what is your call to action? What should we be doing in the U.S.?
It's so easy to look at China and say them, you know, singular, monolithic force, government making decisions. Things don't exactly work that way in America, but that can be our advantage as well. But that's only if we have good distributed infrastructure, right? I mean, we don't have the kind of broadband penetration we need. We need an educational system in which far more people are steered towards science and technology. And at individual level, we need to be more prepared in a way for new technologies coming down the pipeline, whether it's in the biotech area or elsewhere. So there are a lot of things that we, quote unquote, can do, but that really comes down to you, right? This is individual shifts that are needed, an individual kind of awakening. And we call that technique. You know, how prepared are you? What is your TQ? We call it technology quotient. You know, we all have IQ and EQ, but we need to start thinking about what our TQ is if we're going to be prepared for the future and stay ahead of the curve.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people watching say, well, I don't have to worry about that. In fact, this isn't, you know, this is a network aimed at technologically literate people, technology enthusiasts. We're ready, right?
It really depends. You know, here's the other thing. So many people just think about, well, I'm connected through social media.
I have the latest iPhone and I'm on Facebook. I'm ready.
But again, there's so much more that determines whether or not you're ahead of the curve on technology. If you think about biotechnology trends and bioenhancement and the extent to which in other countries, if you look at the news out of China just last week, they had to censor a high school in Shanghai that was giving endurance boosting drugs to students so that they could do that many more hours of homework. Now, that's obviously not the kind of thing we want to be doing. My point is that we don't necessarily have a level playing field. We don't have one code of ethics or law. And there's a lot of experimentation going on. Now, I raise the issue not just to show the excess, but to show that what is your biotechnological TQ? It's probably different from whether or not you have the latest iPhone, right? And then there's the same thing, just your educational system. You know, is going to a high pedigreed liberal arts college on the East Coast or Stanford, is that good enough? Are you guaranteed a job from that? Well, we know very well that you're not. Right, it's not just where you studied; it's what you studied, and it's what skill set you've built up. And you know, with things like Udacity, you can take a single course and get a job out of that now. And there's no guarantee that you know, people coming out of Udacity and Singularity could easily snap up the jobs of people from the Ivy League. So that's another form. What is your educational TQ? So for every sphere of life, you need to think about it, not just from the superficial level of you know, the sort of small T. Technologies and gadgets that you have.
In fact, in some ways, I think we get perhaps numbed and ignorant because we feel like we're using technologies. Really, we're just very, very good consumers. And in a way, that makes us, it traps us.
It's a very good point. It does trap us. It does seduce us. And it's not necessarily productive time. Let me give you an economic example out of all of this. You know, with the financial crisis and rising unemployment, there is obviously a realization that people can't just depend on graduating college or graduate school and getting jobs in investment banks or publishing houses or traditional media. And so a lot more people have to become entrepreneurial much, much sooner. And they have to worry about how to pay the bills themselves. As you may know, Time Magazine is reporting, you know, 3/4 of college graduates are moving back home with their parents. So you have to start to invent and reinvent yourself very quickly. One of the things we talk about in this book is virtual currencies and barter and skills exchanges that have popped up online. How can you get maximum economic value and benefit and cover your expenses and move ahead economically without having to spend money that your hard currency, US dollars, that you don't actually have? That's another example of getting prepared and boosting your economic TQs. It's one of the things that we go into at some length in the book, actually.
It's not all bad news. As you point out, the internet is creating 2.6 jobs for everyone lost to robotics automation. The key is understanding where the opportunities are and preparing yourself for those opportunities. Yes?
Or creating yourself.
Or creating an opportunity for yourself, yeah. So I'm really interested about this biotech thing. You talk about biotech. You know, we had a couple of guys in here the other day, and I don't know if you folks saw the Twit special we did. A guy had basically done an open source kind of, a programming unit that you could do in software, and his buddy had essentially a genomic 3D printer. And what they were saying is it's increasingly possible and even affordable for people to start playing. It was a DNA calculator, playing with this stuff, creating new DNAs, creating new structures, bringing different DNAs together. And then his friend said, and then we can build it. We can make the tree that glows, for instance. by taking fire 5G. So what I got from that is we are on the verge of a revolution that kind of in many ways shadows the information revolution, the informatics revolution, the biotech revolution could change everything we know.
Yeah, and that's precisely why we wanted to get away from the term information age in the book, because it obviously connotes one sector, and biotech, you know, so many people say, is the sort of new thing. The truth is, as we say, it's not going to be the bio age versus the info age versus the neuro age versus the nano age. It's actually all of those at the same time. That's precisely what is meant by the term exponential technologies. It's when these technologies combine that you get the exponential results. But the fact that you mentioned these gentlemen who you had on last week, it's been a big theme at TED Global this year as well, DIY bio labs and some of the startups and experimentation and education that is embedded in creating those ecosystems. And there's a lot of promise in that. Certainly there's a lot of work going on that's already disrupting the traditional pharmaceutical sector, because you're seeing this experimentation happening at the intersection of entrepreneurs and academic institutions that doesn't have the huge overhead and doesn't demand the kind of corporate profit returns. And so there's a lot of scope to do a lot of medical good in new ways.
You also talk a little bit about how it's not just nations, it's cities. Urban centers are, you're calling them info states.
Exactly. You know, this is a mega trend, irrespective of some of the other technologies we've been talking about, and that's urbanization. And this is, of course, a 5,000-year-old phenomenon, really. But we now officially have more people living in cities than in the countryside, and that ratio is growing to something like 70% over the next 15 to 20 years.
Is that just the U.S. or is that true globally?
Oh, that's absolutely worldwide. The rate of urbanization in the developing world is far faster than it is in the United States. So it's particularly in Latin America, Africa, and Asia where the highest number of people are streaming it. Literally, over the course of any one day, over 1 million people, will move into cities around the world, particularly in the developing world, where the populations are really booming and teeming. So we really do focus on the city, because not only are individual cities starting to act like countries unto themselves. I just published a paper about the Pearl River Delta of China, which is seven cities that are technically, Hong Kong has a special status, so does Macau, so does Zhubei, Shenzhen is a special economic zone, Guangzhou at the north end of the Pearl River Delta. Well, these are seven different cities in name only, because increasingly it's one mega city in this connected high-speed rail, dense urban corridor, which, by the way, has almost 100 million people and easily belongs in the G20 of countries. And that's just one of several such urban corridors in China alone. I like to think, actually, given where you are, I like to think of San Francisco to San Jose, basically, right, the valley, as one of these clusters as well that could function economically almost as a country unto itself. The point is, though, they're starting to make their own policies. I'm from New York City. Michael Bloomberg very much runs his own foreign policy, trade, investment, security, intelligence. Sure. People really, they love him for it, to be honest.
He's the mayor as CEO. He's the mayor as president.
Well, and these are the terms that increasingly used. There are two things. First of all, around the world, rich and poor countries alike, you often see that the mayor of the biggest city goes on to become president of the country, because it's really the next best. It's the next biggest job. And it's the person who's most qualified to run a country is, in fact, the mayor of the biggest city. So I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen in the U.S. Eventually. And it's certainly happened elsewhere around the world. There are many active heads of state today whose last job was as mayor. But again, they're making their own policies because they know best what the residents of their cities need. They can be very responsive. And yes, they act like CEOs, and they call themselves CEOs, more or less. Same thing's happening in London. So this is a worldwide phenomenon that we talk about. But there's a huge technology angle, because where are technologies most rapidly tested and deployed and integrated and adopted? It's, of course, by urban populations. So the big debates around privacy and access to information and just efficiency and of course, sustainability and so forth, all of those are urban debates.
We're talking to Parag Khanna, one of the 75 most influential people of the 21st century, according to Esquire magazine. He was on Wired magazine's Smart List and is a geostrategist, self-described geostrategist. His new book is called Hybrid Reality Thriving. And we're going to talk more about that in the emerging human technology civilization. I'm going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to ask you, are we in a utopia or a dystopia? What's ahead for us? And I know you're, I think your wife, Aisha, works for the Singularity Institute, right?
She is the faculty associate at Singularity. Yeah.
So yeah. I want to talk about the Singularity. We've talked to Ray Kurzweil many times, and I'm curious what you think about that. But before we do that, let me point people to your book on Audible.com. I'm a big fan, as we know, of audiobooks. I'm an Audible subscriber. They've been happily sponsoring our shows for, I think, 4 or 5 years now. And I noticed that your last book, How to Run the World, is on Audible.com. So if you want to know more or listen to more of Parag's writings, Parag Khanna, How to Run the World. Now, here's the deal. You get any book free. You know, I didn't plug in my monitor for you there, Brian. Let me see if I can find the plug here. I can't. But you got it. There it is. There it is. If you want to get this book free or get a credit toward almost any of the 100,000 volumes at audible.com, all you have to do is visit audiblepodcasts.com/triangulation. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. First month's free. First credit is free. And you can cancel at any time. Pay nothing, but the book is yours to keep forever. There are so many great choices. I was just looking. They have this A-list collection, great books performed by Hollywood's finest. Dustin Hoffman does Being There, Colin Firth, The End of the Affair, Nicole Kidman to The Lighthouse, Jennifer Connelly, The Sheltering Sky. I want to hear Anne Hathaway read The Wizard of Oz. That sounds good to me. So here's the deal. I just made it very, very difficult for you to do this. Pick one book out of the 100,000. Make that yours for free. I guarantee you it'll get you hooked. You can listen on your iPhone, your iPod. I listen on my Android devices. They now finally have the Audible app for Windows Mobile as well. The Audible app's really a great way to listen on your portable device, but I listen everywhere I go. Even my Sonos supports Audible. Audible.com. To find your book, then go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation to get your first book free. And I think, in honor of our guest, we should recommend How to Run the World. Because now, are you going to do hybrid reality at Audible? Do you know?
I'm going. Yeah. It's just been published by TED Books, and I'm set to go and record the Audible at some point.
Excellent.
Soon.
That's fair. Yeah, they're just over the river in Newark, or over the woods. I don't know how you get there. There's a tunnel. There's a tunnel. So how is you're at TED Global in Edinburgh right now? That sounds like an amazing event. Have you spoken yet?
TED is always amazing, to be honest with you. And you know, when you midway through any TED event, you wish like your whole life were just one long TED conference. It wears you out. It's exasperatingly brilliant. I'm speaking tomorrow, but what I'm actually doing is curating an entire session about transparency. So I've been working with 5 or 6 speakers for the last 6 months to get them up to speed into sort of an integrated program on the consequences of radical openness and the political consequences of transparency. We all live in glass houses now. What does that mean? So we have designers and architects and political experts who have been working on freedom of information movements, and someone who's done an amazing expose on WikiLeaks, all in this one packed session. So it's going to be great.
Wow. You, this is great. You really are wide-ranging. I mean, it seems like you cover anything you are interested in. I mean, from cities to transparency to biotech to informatics. I mean, what fun.
A great revelation. Before I met my wife, I had never heard of Ray Kurzweil. There are two kinds of people in the world, I think, those who have heard of Ray Kurzweil and those who haven't. And I had not, because I'm a political scientist by training. But she is the technologist. And like I said earlier, you know, where my geo and her tech come together is really how this book happened. And so for me, the last 5-6 years have been a crash course. It's not that I haven't been exposed to technology. Obviously, my brother, in fact, runs a lab at Cisco.
Oh, neat.
So it's in the family. But that said, I'm a social scientist, but I'm just applying macro frameworks for understanding trends and history and where interdisciplinary approaches to the future, and bringing in technology in a big way. So you don't have to yourself be a scientist to write a book like this. In fact, it's probably better not to have been.
Just stand outside it and look in. Now, really, I mean, technology is kind of a vague term. Somebody once said anything is a technology that wasn't invented when you were born. You know, it's something new. A pencil was technology to the first guy who saw one. A zipper was technology to the first person who used one. When you say technology, what do you mean?
Well, we mean very much technology with a big T, you know, and we emphasize that in the early part of this book. Anyone can talk about, like I said earlier, small T technologies, just gadgets, but this is really about the big arc of technology in all of these different areas. So that's what we mean. We mean the system. And I suppose you may have spoken in the past with people like Brian Arthur and Kevin Kelly, and those are really seminal intellectuals who they also talk about technology with a big T, and that's what we're here.
Yeah, Kevin talks about what technology wants, as if it has an internal drive towards something. Do you feel that is true?
Yeah, I mean, the simple word for it is agency. You know, technology has taken on something of a life of its own and has a certain agency. And we believe it certainly does, because we react to it, it reacts to us. And we shape it, it shapes us. And that's what we mean by coevolution, which we talk about so much in this book. And we don't just mean evolution in the biological sense, though that's most certainly true as well. But evolution manifests itself in many ways. Our social systems also evolve, and technology shapes those. So I think that not only, you know, Kevin Kelly is an individual, but his book is truly one of the great, you know, books of this century.
Yeah. So it's a feedback loop. Technology influences us, we influence technology, and we grow together.
Yeah. And you can, of course, you can say that and make that point as we do and others do over and over and over. The beauty is to see it and, you know, to posit it as a framework and then see it come to life every single day, everywhere you look.
Right. So, utopia or dystopia?
You know, that's also one of those techno-optimist, techno-pessimist. And we very clearly state that we're techno-pragmatists. You don't uninvent technology. You don't put the genie back in the bottle.
Right.
As we say, you know, nuclear power can heat homes or destroy nations, right? You know, you choose. So we're pragmatists very much. You know, we think every era has a key driving set of technologies, and we know more about them than ever before. We can foresee as much as or anticipate the consequences better than ever, and so we have very few excuses to not get it right. So that's why we end the book by talking about Pax Technologica. You know, every era of history is named after the hegemonic power that ruled a century or two, whether it's the Mongols or Pax Britannica, Great Britain, Pax Americana, us, Pax Romana, the Romans. But of course, as you know, as anyone who went through high school history knows, these were never really peaceful eras, even though we use the Latin prefix Pax. So what we talk about in this book at the end is Pax Technologica. What would that look like? You know, what if we focus not on rivalries over natural resources, oil, gas, and so forth, but about the technologies that would diminish the need for those rivalries? And how would that apply to other areas as well? So we're kind of looking at, or we try to hopefully at least close on that note.
We often talk about the American century, and that was the 20th century. Is the 21st century the Chinese century?
Well, that's the thing. We say it's the technological century. You know, we don't believe that. What's interesting is that whoever is the reigning, you know, hegemonic power has to control world infrastructure at the same time. You have to control the telegraph and the sea lanes the way the British did, or have the most preponderant army and control the economy the way we have. And that's not going to be the case in the 21st century, because China could have a very powerful military, but it's certainly not going to be equal or greater to that of the United States, and not to mention all of the other military powers there are in Asia and outside of Asia. Nor will it be, it may be the largest economic power, but it's not going to be 75% of the world economy. So there's going to be not a winner. There's not going to be East dominating the West, or the Pacific replacing the Atlantic, or China replacing America. These are all just simple cliches that people use when they want to assume that the world has to be neat and orderly and run by one player. So I assure you categorically, China will never rule the world, but we will also never rule the world again. So we're looking at this situation where we have to have this global coexistence of, you know, 7, 8, 9 billion people distributed across over 200, potentially, you know, in some decade or more, 250 countries, mostly concentrated in these 800 or 900 cities that really matter. And those are going to be a very different, you know, cultures and ambitions and so forth. So you're not going to have any one power dominate such a diffuse landscape in which there are companies based in America that are more powerful than many countries in other parts of the world. It's far too complex to declare a winner.
It's a hybrid age.
It sure is.
Yeah. All right, now I understand the title of the book. You explained it. I get it.
Oh, good.
So I'm sure Aisha has something to say about singularity. You know, Ray Kurzweil and others have famously predicted that they're not so far off. In fact, coming on like a train aimed straight at us is the singularity, a time when machines can effectively are as smart as humans and are indistinguishable from humans. Is that coming, and what do we do?
Well, it's important to distinguish between singularity as the postulate of this moment in time of the parity of man and machine intelligence versus, this bricks and mortar institution and university, in Mountain View, California, that is devoted not to, bringing us there as quickly as possible, but really to exploring very scientifically, very methodically, very thoughtfully, the consequences of accelerating technologies. That's right. Really what that institution is about. So I think on a day-to-day level, the people there are not actually sitting around in coffee houses and wondering about, whether alien Prometheus is going to become true or not.
Right.
You see incredibly concrete, tangible work around the biotechnology space, impact of 3D printing and manufacturing and a whole host of other areas. So it's a very concrete look at accelerating technologies. And again, most importantly, what are the consequences for our economies, for our political systems, and for our social lives? And those are the kinds of implications that don't get widely enough discussed.
I know your friend Don Tapscott very well. We've had him on the show before, talking about his future of a digital future.
He opened the TED conference this week, and he was just doing what's called a cage match, sponsored by Autodesk, which is also one of the main sponsors of Singularity University. And it was, let's just say, I hope that some YouTube video gets leaked very soon and puts that up online.
Was he in a cage match with somebody else?
Yeah, it was literally a group of six people chosen to wear Scottish sachets and kilts and to literally have the nerdiest intellectual grudge match possibly imagined. I'm literally coming from that. It's 1 o'clock in the morning here.
Oh, and my goodness.
This is still going on about 200 yards from where I'm sitting right now.
Well, I won't keep you much longer. I think you want to get back. To that, but I don't want to let you go without giving. Maybe you don't do this, but do you have a prescription for our audience? They're technologically literate. I think I would say they're more than gadget hounds. They understand technology. Many of them are IT or professionals or programmers or at least hardcore enthusiasts. We feel like, well, we understand technology. We embrace the technological future. But what is your prescription for us? How should we prepare for this hybrid reality?
None of those things means that you have built scenarios around what's going to happen exactly 10 years from now.
We have no idea. In fact, mostly we think it's happening so fast, we can't possibly look that far ahead, I would guess.
Right. Well, that's the irony. I mean, it's happening fast enough that you can extrapolate instead of looking 10 years out, just look 5 years out, right? What should you be studying? We know that some studies suggest that the majority of jobs that will exist 50 or 20 years from now aren't being taught yet in university. So have you really sat down and said, okay, what are the technologies that I'm hearing about? And how would one study them in university? How would I build a curriculum around that if I'm going back to school?
Right.
Should I save money for medical enhancement, for advanced prosthetics, or for some 3D printed organ if I need it? Versus for
are you doing that?
I'm actually not, because we got to first, two kids, so we got to focus on the kids.
Save for them; they may need them though.
But we are buying them lots of Legos because we do think that's a very traditional but very useful learning tool.
That's good. Those
are just two or three examples, by the way, of ways in which you can actually take a concrete look at just technology and give it a real hard think and formulate lessons for what you today, right now, can do. Of course, there's a lot more in the book about things like virtual currencies. I mentioned educational systems and so forth.
It's all being disrupted as we speak. We're in a slow motion earthquake, And it's nice to have some guys like Prag Khanna to at least say, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this. The book is Hybrid Reality, Thriving in the Emerging Human Technology Civilization. And I think we all agree that's what's happening. Let's figure out what we do about it. Parag, thank you so much for... I didn't realize it was 1 a.m. in Edinburgh. Thank you for staying up late.
My pleasure.
Are you going to run back and see how the cage match is going?
Oh, I don't know. I think, you know, they were serving a lot of free doers.
Oh, so dear.
Just passed out and strewn about now, cobblestone streets at this point.
Oh, there it is. I think there's video right now on the YouTube site. Oh my goodness, this is one trend. Maybe this isn't something new. It feels like it's something new, and certainly Ted is at the forefront of this, where people really at least are having the discussion and the dialogue and the conversation. We're recognizing that something's happening, and we're all, I think, together trying to figure out what is it.
They are, and I have to say this, it is really beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful to experience that. People are having so much fun with the most serious topics imaginable.
Right. I'm bullish. I'm a technological optimist.
Good.
Because what else are you going to do?
Absolutely.
I'm not burying any gold in the backyard, that's for sure.
No.
Thank you, Parag. Parag Khanna, the new book, Hybrid Reality. Thanks for joining us. Maybe if you get back to the San Francisco Bay Area sometime, I'd love to meet you and your wife. You can come in and we can spend some more time talking.
Would love to. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Parag. Take care. We do triangulation. As you can see, Tom's here sometimes, sometimes not. It is no longer three legs on a stool. Sometimes it's just two, but doesn't mean it's going to fall over. I suppose we should come up with a better name, but hey, we're stuck with it. We do triangulation every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. That is 4 plus 2 is 6 plus times 2300 UTC. Kind of late, but we're loving having you whenever you can watch after the fact. Just download the audio and video from our site, twit.tv/TRI. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Do we know who's next week on the... No, it's going to be a mystery. I know Nolan Bushnell's coming up, right? That'll be fun. The creator of Atari. Lots of great people ahead. This is for Triangulation. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.